Are you looking for inventory this time of year?
I have just the answer. It's called The List. Yep, that's it. The List. It's a premium sourcing service brought to you by Andy Slammons, where you get quality, actionable inventory from real sellers. These are million-dollar-plus sellers who bring you the finds in real time. Oh, and by the way, they're buying them themselves. Bring your business to the next level with The List. There are a few openings, but it's capped at 100, and they're so close, but you still can get in if you sign up now at thelistishere.com. Thelistishere.com. Oh, and make sure you tell Andy I sent you.
Welcome to the e-commerce Momentum Podcast, where we focus on the people, the products, and the process of e-commerce selling today. Here's your host, Stephen Peterson.
Welcome back to the e-commerce Momentum Podcast. This is episode 170, Michael Flanagan. You'll know Michael's name. He was a guest, episode number 21. Which is incredible to me, way back in 2015. And here he is up in number 170. And it's so cool to catch up with someone, especially someone who's been working on their business, not in their business, on their business. And we really get into it in this session. And what I really like is we spend some time talking about using other fulfillment options because it's becoming an issue. And we spent some time talking about that. And I think there's some good key learnings there. Also, catching up on his business is just great. Let's get into the podcast. All right, welcome back to the e-commerce Momentum Podcast. And man, I am so excited about tonight's guest. It was almost 150 episodes ago that we spoke, Michael Flanagan. Welcome back, Michael.
Thanks for having me, Stephen. Pleasure to be back.
August of 2015. Is that crazy?
Yeah, it doesn't seem like it was that long ago, but yeah, I guess it was.
It's just time is flying. We were at some place today, and the guy was like, "Do you realize January is just about over?" And I'm like, "Oh my God, you're right. I never even thought about it, that January is just about over." Of 2017, Mike, is it crazy how fast time – has it gotten faster as you've gotten older?
Oh, absolutely. It is so true what they say, that when you're in high school, it seems like that 4 years that you're in high school is a lifetime. And then you get out of high school and you head off to college. And it's like, wow, college didn't seem to take as long as high school. Yeah, it was still 4 years. And then you get a little bit older and you get into the job. And then you start saying, well, 10 years went by. And that seems like a shorter time than it was that I was in high school. So absolutely. It just, the years seem to tick off now, where when you're younger, it's the months that tick off.
And in this business, the change is, I mean, it definitely is accelerating. Wouldn't you agree?
Oh, yeah. Oh, definitely. It's every single day, it seems like there's something new that you have to address or you have to be aware of. And I think it's just because that's another, I believe, good point is we talk about how fast time seems to go by. And we seem to think that e-commerce has been around forever, and all of us selling on Amazon, yes, we've been selling on for years. This is still the infancy of e-commerce as a percentage of total goods sold, and it's just going to keep getting bigger and bigger. And yeah, there's still major companies, including Amazon, that are still trying to figure this out.
Yeah, they definitely don't have it figured out. What is it, 15%? This is prior to Christmas of 2016, 15% of all commerce was done online. Only 15%.
Right. And when you talk to people, if you just went up to someone and said, okay, you know, everybody just says, yes, we do all our shopping on Amazon. And if you just asked, you know, the guy on the street, you know, what percentage of the total sales that happen in the country today do you think Amazon gets? And I would not be surprised at all if they say, oh, more than half. I always shop on Amazon. Mm. I don't go to the malls anymore. Oh, more than half. They just don't have a clue that, no, it's still just a tiny little piece of that big pie.
Here's something else I've noticed, is that generationally, it's significantly, which it used to be skewed, everybody young, of course, would just buy everything on Amazon. But I'm noticing older and older people also getting to that comfort level of buying online, which is unheard of.
Exactly. Yeah. And we it's kind of like you've crossed over that hump that, you know, you're getting all the, you know, of course the Gen X's, but the baby boomers now have caught up with the technology. At least they're online. They're all on Facebook now as a way to stay in touch with their kids as they've moved out of the house and such. And they get comfortable with it and then just, migrate over and say, all right, well, let me give this Amazon a try. Find out, oh, I just click this button and tell them to send it to me, and here it shows up. Yeah, they pick it up.
And what's funny is now with these ads that follow you around, that behavioral targeting, you'll see that particular item you looked at on Amazon following you 6 to 8 different websites, and you're like, huh.
Yeah, I'm
they're
I'm
following me.
As you know, I'm a tech guy. That was my career for the last 20 some odd years, and it still amazes me to this day where I'll just be cruising along on some site and just looking at something, and then later on I'll be on a Facebook or something like that, and I'll get that targeted marketing, and it still catches me sometimes like, oh, I was just thinking about that. You know, how interesting is that I happen to be thinking about that. It's like, oh yeah, I actually looked at that item on some other site and they track that and they're going to show it to me again.
I remember when Walmart was the big cutting edge and one of the big innovations, and it blows my mind to think about it. It's so stupid common sense, but it wasn't done. You Kmart, which was the dominant player way back in the day, right? Sold batteries. They had a battery department. You go there, they had every kind of battery you ever wanted to see. Man, they were everywhere, right? Mm-hmm. Walmart comes along and they have a small battery department because they also put batteries by every item that needs batteries. And it's like, huh. So they were able to take their sale, you know, of a flashlight and add 2 batteries to it or a toothbrush or whatever. And they were genius enough to figure out that people who bought a toothbrush, electric toothbrush, needed batteries, right? Or what have you. And they were smart enough to take advantage of it. And it sounds so silly to think about, oh yeah, of course that makes common sense. Well, that wasn't done. That wasn't the way it was done. There was a department, the battery department.
And then Amazon and a lot of the other e-commerce sites out there took that to the next level. With the people who purchased this also purchased this.
But this is a build on. This is my point, is that this is really, this stuff, you know, in our pre-interview, you and I were talking, so many of the things that we're talking about today that we're seeing Amazon do and Walmart.com do and all these different things, this occurred when Walmart came into town and closed all these small businesses, right? These things have already occurred. They're just now electronic, or they have figured a way to make them electronically happen. This is nothing new. Would you agree?
Oh, absolutely. And it you just keep seeing history repeat itself, but it's just updated. We're doing it with technology. So as we discussed, you know, there are people that complain about the competitors that jump onto a product and drive the price down. And, you know, how is this fair and why are they doing that? And it's like, well, we'll jump in your Wayback Machine and go back 15 or 20 years and go to the mom and pop shop on Main Street that was selling, you know, toys and things of that nature. And we're doing just fine and making a living. And then Walmart opened up a super center in their town. And all of a sudden, they were selling the same toy that they had at their cost. Hmm. And it was because there was this behemoth that came along and could buy so much better than you and what have you. And there it was. You now had competition that was able to sell at a price that either you didn't want to sell at or absolutely could not sell at. And yeah, you heard all of it. It was destroying Main Street USA. Well, now we hear the same thing that I started on Amazon 7, 8, 9 years ago. And I used to be able to make a great living on that, great margins. But now there's too many people selling and there's too many big mega sellers out there that are driving prices down. So you just kind of chuckle if you've been in the industry, you know, long enough. That it's like, this isn't new. This is just the natural free market system taking over.
And so, and to what end, right? So what happens, right? So this is history repeating itself. What are we likely to see in these trends? Right now we're seeing Amazon dealing with counterfeit issues, right? So they're cracking down and addressing this, which they should. Mm-hmm. You're seeing mega sellers just get bigger and bigger and bigger. Right. We're seeing, you know, think about it. You and I personally know hundreds and hundreds of million-dollar sellers.
Right.
Right. Now, how much money they're making, that's another story. But we right. personally know that. We're seeing the drop shippers still exist, even though they're trying to close them down every chance they can. There's some that are excelling. I mean, like excelling, you know, doing tens of millions of dollars. So to what end, what's the next likely step in this continual reset, right? It'll go for a while, then it'll reset, then it'll go for a while, reset.
Well, I think what's kind of funny, and as we just talked about, is that, you know, we had our Main Street USA and the killer, the small store killer of Walmart stepped in. We're about to see that happen exactly the same way again, with Walmart actually coming in and finally recognizing that Amazon is, you know, eating their lunch when it comes to online sales. And they were one of the players that had enough when it came to resources and abilities to actually put up some competition to Amazon. So it will be interesting to see what happens when all of these different marketplaces become more popular, and what do the third-party sellers do when they have multiple marketplaces that they can list their products on, and what are these different marketplaces going to offer to entice these sellers to go on. And the other thing that I think is important is another point we talked about earlier is this barrier to entry. And unlike a mom and pop store, a brick and mortar store, if you decided that, hey, I think I can sell Legos and Transformers and such during Christmas and make a lot of money selling toys and things of that nature, so I'm going to open up a store on Main Street. Well, that took significant financial investment. You would never do it until you really took the time to run your numbers and make sure that you're going to make a profit, account for every single expense you were going to have. Well, you don't have that with Amazon or really any of these online marketplaces. All it takes is for you to fill out a couple of forms and start sending product in. And, you know, as we were talking earlier, that's a good thing and it's a bad thing. It's a good thing that it's very easy for you to make a huge difference in your life and your lifestyle by having the opportunity to get in at a relatively low cost and build a thriving business that can really make a difference in your family's life. But then it also allows somebody that has no clue whatsoever to do the exact same thing and jump on and start selling product at a loss without even realizing that they're losing money.
I agree with you. You know, this reminds me of, I'm going to make this correlation, see how crazy this is. So I was thinking as you were talking about the low barrier to entry, in the retail world, what's one of the lowest barrier to entry businesses that continue to fail at I think a 98% failure rate? I'm thinking of the mom and pop restaurant. The small, oh, yeah. I'm just talking the small one. You can start a restaurant for virtually almost nothing because you can buy almost everything from a closed right. one, right? I mean, they just go in and I don't know about your town, but there's a coffee shop that just never can make it in our town. And it changed owners, you know, dozens of times.
Well, and that's what the funny thing is that you see this particular restaurant or coffee shop, like you said, it's been at the same location, but in the last 20 years, it's had 18 different coffee shops in that same location. And it's so funny that the 19th person, for some reason, thinks he's going to make a go of it.
Right. And here's my point, is that they never set up the infrastructure correctly. It's never been a business. It's been a job. They created themselves a job or, you know, a glorified hobby. They've never really taken the time to, you know, put the insurances in place. All the things that you and I know that are necessary to own a business and to run a business. Right. And so they don't. And so what happens is they fail. So my correlation is when I come over to this e-commerce business, the ones that tend to fail are the ones that still haven't set them up successful. They haven't figured out a profit and loss statement. Like you said, they don't know what's profitable, what's not. They haven't built in all their real costs, right? By the time you know, time is money. By the time you chase down products and by the time you get them and you process and blah, 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 there's so many things that you need to consider. And if you don't build that into your model, you don't build a successful structural business, it's a glorified job, hobby, And more than likely, you're not going to be successful. You're going to be one of those guys sitting there saying, I don't know how they can buy it cheaper than me. I got the best deal. All those kind of things. Do you agree?
Mm-hmm. Oh, I agree. I agree totally. And that was one of the things that I started off. I've always been a numbers guy. Always want to run the numbers and understand exactly what's going on. And when I would talk to people, especially when you're first starting out and you're doing RA, and they would say, okay, well, I'm selling this amount of product and I'm making this amount of money. This is my net profit. And I said, well, first of all, let's correct that, because the numbers you're reading to me are numbers that you're getting from Amazon. That's not your net profit. That's your gross profit. So that is before all of the other expenses that happen outside of Amazon. And they're like, oh, no, there weren't any. That's how much I paid for it. So when I'm calculating, and I said, oh, so your time is worth nothing. Hmm. And they said, well, you know, I could have been watching TV, or I could have been doing that. And it's like, oh, boy, here we go again. No, your time is worth something. What about, did you use your car to drive around and get all that product? Well, of course they did. Well, did you have to put gas in that car? Is there wear and tear on that car? You know, all of those types of things. Okay, when you got the product, you had to put it in a box and you had to send it in. Did you take into account the cost of the boxes that you're doing this? So when you're talking about that, this is how much money I'm making, and then somehow at the end of the month, you're trying to figure out why isn't there any money left in the checking account? And the reason is because you haven't truly accounted for what you're making on each one of these sales. And until you take all of that into consideration, usually what happens, and this is even worse, it's when people actually have a good business model where you see your sales increase month after month after month. But what that will hide is that you are cash flow positive. You keep rolling dollars over.
Or cash flow negative, you mean.
Or yeah, cash flow negative, but your gross sales make up for that.
Right.
So what you can do is you can keep seeing more and more and more money coming in through your business month after month. But in fact, you are losing money every single month. And as soon as you have a month that you had no growth, It isn't even that you have to go down in sales. All you have to do is have a month where you sell the same amount that you did last month, and all of a sudden the snowball that's been chasing you will roll you right over.
Yeah. Oh, I agree. You know, thinking about that, do you think there's a number that, you know, I just got done with the Young Gun series, right? And I had updates from five of the six. And every single one of them have said that they're not chasing growth for growth's sake anymore. They really are trying to optimize their business. And what's interesting is the sales levels are anywhere from $1 million up to $5 million. Uh-huh. And so what's cool is that Michael's number is different than Steven's number. It's different than Bob's number. It's different than Jim for them. And so they're optimizing at the level they want to be at. And I think that's just so smart. I mean, I think people, if they would figure out they don't need to make $1 million a year, right? They really, to change their life, they need to make, you know, $112,000 a year. And that's something different when that becomes your goal, right? So have you figured out, have you thought about, because I always use Andy Slammons and I always talk about the 17 to 20% net profit after everything, after taxes, after insurances, all that kind of stuff. That's the numbers that I tend to see and I've seen over time. And I know there are outliers that crush that, but I know there are people doing 3%, 2%, 1%.
I'll tell you right now, those numbers you gave me, I consider an incredibly successful business.
Agreed.
Incredibly successful.
Agreed. Walmart doesn't do that, right?
No, of course they don't.
So you think about that. If you could back into it and say, hey, you know, Michael, I'm going to describe something for you. I'm going to give you a lifestyle where you get to kind of wake up when you want to, go to bed when you want to, take the vacations when you want to, spend time with your family when you want to, put your head down and do the work when you want to, enjoy your kids, your grandkids, invest in yourself and go to training and go out and meet people and do all these different things. And you're going to need X amount of income. What would that income be? Right. Do you get where I'm going with that? And then I would say back into the business that way. And because I think it's, you know, everybody hears Michael did $1 million in sales. And then all of a sudden, oh shit, Steve only did 600,000 in sales. I failed.
Right. And that to me is so ridiculous. Because success for one is failure to another. And, you know, if you had posed that to me, so here's the perfect example. You got updates from the young guns. Mm-hmm. Well, right now you're doing a podcast with an old gun. You know, I'm in the decline. I'm 56. I just turned 56 this month. So I am no longer interested. So as we talked earlier, I have a prep service that my wife and I run. And it's very small, very exclusive. And I've been told that it's like, well, why don't you open this up? You know, if you doubled the size of your warehouse with the service that you offer, you could easily double the size. And it's like, because that's not the lifestyle that we want.
Exactly.
So I could grow that a lot bigger and we'd make more money, but it would be a lot more work, a lot more stress. That's not where we're at. So we're now looking more towards the, okay, I'm more interested in some sustainable income and different income revenue streams and things of that nature that I can sit back and put in a little bit of time now, but see that revenue come in over time. So I'm not interested in growing a huge Amazon business. We're doing it. We are continuing to grow our business, but it's completely different from the young guns. That I have no doubt in my mind that those guys are going to just keep growing and growing because they've got that hunger and that drive. But then they'll get to a point where they start saying, you know, a goose is the perfect example. I love that kid to death, but I just cannot put the time in that he does.
Right.
He's got a phenomenal business. He's got a phenomenal work ethic, but And he's reaping the benefits from that. But at some point, he's going to start to say, well, I could either, you know, continue at this level and make more money, or I could back it off a little bit, you know, change my lifestyle a bit and reap some of those benefits.
And he is saying that. He actually did say that because he's hit that point where, you know, I mean, he did a huge business, almost all RA. And so he is at that place saying exactly what you're saying is that, I'd like to back down a little bit and I can't given my current situation. There's only one way to keep going. Feed the beast, feed the beast, feed the beast. Right. We all hear that, right? And so you feel like you're in that lifestyle mode. You know, I just wrote down what my headline of your model is going to be, your episode, building a sustainable model through multiple channels. Because I think that's the key. What you described, the word you used was sustainable. And yes. I think that is so important. You know, when we talked last time, you were knee deep in your co-op warehouse. You were still in the stages of setting it up. So now that it's set up, right, it's complete. You've gotten as big as you want to get. You have no openings. So let's be clear about that right now. There are no openings. But you still offer that almost concierge level service. Is that fair?
Absolutely. And that is why, and I'm not shy about this. There's no secrets. We have 15 clients.
Period.
Now, yeah. So you compare that to Brendan and Mark, who are great friends of ours. They're right around the corner from us at PZP. And I speak with Brendan regularly. He comes to my warehouse. I go to his warehouse. Two completely different business models. He has hundreds of accounts and employees everywhere in a massive warehouse. And he does a super, super job. But we wanted to do a service where we give we talk to our clients. I've got to believe that we talk to our clients on average once a day. On average. There may be a day that we don't talk. Yeah, all 15, because it'll be, we can do the type of thing, hey, we just got this shipment in and we're looking at this product and we're looking at what you had listed. And you know what? The picture on this one shows a Nerf gun with a blue barrel. This one has an orange barrel. So we just want to alert you to that, and you might want to check and make sure that that's not a different ASIN, and it might give you a problem. Well, if we were running through 100 accounts and just processing, you know, tens of thousands of goods, we wouldn't have to do that. We'd have to just make judgment calls and say, yep, that's what they ordered, that's what they got, and move along. So we really wanted to make it so that we were the eyes and ears of our clients, and we also do things that, you know, they can call up and say, we've got this special deal. I've got a high volume purchase that I can do, but it's not going to quite fit the way that we normally do our products. How can we make this work? And we'll sit down and talk about it, because the name of my service is Our Shared Warehouse. And that is, it wasn't just a name. That's what it is. We share this warehouse.
It's a co-op. And they have a vested interest in its success.
Exactly.
You know, let's talk about that, because, you know, that concierge service allows you to change as the markets change. One of the, well, two big changes that really have happened, and I guess they're related, are Amazon has finally convinced us all that they are not a warehouse company. They are a fulfillment service. And the way they're beating it down our necks is through fees, right? They are feeing us to death. I'm staring at a very, very large long-term service fee that I need to, long-term storage fee that I need to whittle down some more. I've whittled, but I need to whack a few. And it's not, I'm not alone. And I mean, I know.
Oh, no, absolutely not.
And so, so the way you deal with it is you have to get smarter, right? So you can still get the buy 1,000 units to get that price. You just can't send in 1,000 units. You've got to be smarter about that. And so by having a small concierge warehouse like you do, you have two things that you can do. One is store, and then help manage my inventory for me and send in, hey, I need to send in 100 units every 10 days, not all 1,000, right?
Right.
And then the second thing is, and this is new for you, is you can actually start doing merchant fulfill.
Correct.
Now, that is going to be the new wave. Now, and what's funny is we're back to the old story. There have been fulfillment companies forever.
Oh yeah,
I mean forever, right? They, you know, before there was mail, they were fulfillment companies delivering stuff by horse and wagon. So that's not a new business, but it's new to our world, generally.
Well, not perfectly new,
because John Bullard's been doing it for a while, but it's not perfectly new, but it's new for all of us FBA newbies.
Right.
Is that
fair? But what we had is, yes, you've had fulfillment centers for, like you said, forever. So, and e-commerce existed before Amazon was there too.
Long before.
Yeah, there were people that had their websites up and they were selling product online, and they would use a traditional fulfillment center to do that. Mm-hmm. And if some of these fulfillment centers had had the vision to see where Amazon was going, I think that they really could have just dominated, so there would have been no Bullards and there wouldn't have been me, because we wouldn't have been able to compete with the infrastructure that they have. But the problem is, in a merchant fulfilled fulfillment scenario, that's traditional. We take the product out, we throw it in a box, and we send it off to the client. Sending product to Amazon is a whole different game. And that's why fourth quarter is so difficult for all of us prep centers, because what happens is the volume, so my average client's volume could double, triple, or quadruple, but I don't have the ability to quadruple my staff just for the months of November and December, because in order for somebody to process Amazon goods, to go to Amazon, there is significant training that has to happen,
right?
Because we're putting clients' accounts at risk.
Right. It has to be done right. There's no
so it has
just
to be
about.
Right.
It's there's one way to do it, period.
Exactly.
Period.
And that's where the traditional fulfillment center either can't or wasn't willing to put those processes in place to be able to support that.
Well, I don't think their workforce is designed to handle that, because
absolutely
typically
not.
They use, you know, I mean, I don't want to put the, you know, there's a difference between a forklift operator and a person preparing a shipment. There's a big difference, because there is so much, there's, you know, there's a lot to it. And so there is a big difference. And so their transient workforce, low paid, typically is not designed for that.
Right. So that's what we ended up with. Skilled, trained order processors, because of the nature of what we're doing, and we require a minimum a month of them working with somebody else until we feel confident that they can process an order on their own without anybody checking their work and doing that. So that handles all of that part of it. But as we're starting to move along, and like you said, we're seeing the hints that started with Amazon, which were the November, December, you know, we're increasing our storage fees here. Their traditional increase of storage fees, the limit on products being sent in. So you found a great deal on something, you bought 200 of them, you go to send them in, and they say, nope, you can't send that many. We have enough of them in stock already. All of these little hints to let you know that Amazon feels that they've got enough warehouse space, they're tired of buying up more real estate, and they don't want to have that in. And then the final one, which all of the booksellers have just, you know, cringed at, is that you're no longer getting even the first item for free. Hmm. And that was, if you don't get it from that Amazon does not want to warehouse your product. They want you to send in enough product to sell in 30 days and then replenish that. They don't want product sitting in their warehouse for months.
Right.
They want it to move through because warehouse space is expensive. So what we're finding is, as especially not only with just Amazon, but with all of these other marketplace platforms coming online, and Walmart being a big one, until there is a fulfilled by Walmart, for us early adopters that are working to get onto Walmart, one of the things they say is you absolutely cannot fulfill Walmart sales from Amazon.
Right.
It cannot show up in an Amazon box, which makes perfect sense. It
makes perfect sense for both of their businesses.
Exactly. But what it means is that the vast majority of the Walmart.com sellers are already going to be on Amazon. I don't think you're going to have many sellers that say, I'm going to get started in this marketplace and I want to start selling online, so I'll start with Walmart.
Right.
So they're already going to be established on Amazon, and now they're going to want to be able to sell on Walmart. They're going to want to be able to sell on Jet. They want to sell on Best Buy. They want to sell on Monoprice. There's all of these different marketplaces. But the problem is, how do you have your inventory available and fulfilled for all of these different marketplaces and all of these sales coming in, and try and do that out of your house? I think it's going to be extremely difficult. So I think that the prep centers that have a little bit of a vision and recognize what's coming down the pike, in order to stay viable and relevant, they are going to have to merchant fulfill.
There's no choice. And that is an animal. That is a different, as you said, that's a different type of person. And that is, I guess that's the beauty of you staying small, that you have the ability, plus the other 14 people have say in what direction you go, because it's a cooperative warehouse. So they all see it. They all need it. And so they have some say. You know, and the interesting thing, and I know we talked about this way back, I am surprised more people haven't started a cooperative warehouse similar to yours. You know, in fairness, you got Brendan and Mark from PZP offering premium service. And so they will do, you know, that. You got Matt Kelly and Todd Forrester now doing it in Delaware, opening up their warehouse. You got the Bullards. You've got Or out in California. You've got there's a lot of them, but I'm surprised there hasn't been more cooperative warehouses created.
Yeah, I'm actually surprised that I don't know how many there were before that were using my type of a model, but the reason that I ended up doing it and the reason why my prices were so low compared to all the others was that I wasn't looking to grow a business and a significant profit center. I was looking to not have to pack boxes myself.
Right.
I hated it. I hated packing boxes, and we had no ability. We were starting to move into wholesale, and we had no ability to receive pallets, to receive in and ship out pallets. And I said, but I'm not big enough to be able to afford a 2,500 square foot warehouse, because that was the smallest I could find that had a dock. And I looked and I looked and I looked and I said, we're just not big enough. We're not there yet. But in order to get there, I have to get into wholesale. So I have to be able to do pallets. So I was caught in a catch-22. And as I have done in my entire entrepreneurial life, is to recognize that if I have this problem, there has to be other people like me out there that are going through the exact same thing. So I just said, okay, well, if I'm doing this and I'm having this problem, there's got to be others out there that are doing this. So let me just put some feelers out there and say, look, if I just figured out what the total overhead was to run this, and I said 10 people, I just took my total overhead and I divided it by 10, right. And then I added 15%. I'm telling you, my entire business model, I added 15% to cover unexpected costs.
And if you made a 15%, but if you make a 15% profit in that business, right? So, right. I mean, you're not a nonprofit. So there is somebody absolutely. Earning a profit.
Right.
We just got done saying that an Amazon business typically is 17 to 20%. So after all of that, and you earned a decent 15%, that's still a good business.
I agree. And added on top of that is that my Amazon business pays nothing for processing.
So you get that benefit. So that makes it.
I've got the added benefit. Correct.
Okay. Well, I was surprised that nobody has. But, you know, then again, it's an evolving world right now, and the needs are changing, and it'll be interesting to see. All right, let's take a break because I want to come back and talk about software and tools, and you got some crazy idea about making that world a little different. We'll be right back. You know, it's so easy when you get a sponsor for the show and you use their services. And I do. It's Karen Locker's Solutions for E-Commerce. solutionsforecommerce.com/momentum will get you 10% off right now. I've been using her for, I guess it's been a year and change since I first interviewed her. Hired her pretty much right after the show because I'm like, I need everything you're talking about. I've got problems with stranded inventory. And guess what? I had lots of problems with stranded inventory last year as the restrictions were coming through. Boom, she'd fix it. If there's an issue with the photo, fixed. All that kind of stuff. I get refunds now. They just show up. Hey, you know, we're replying to your cases. Here's your refund. My feedback. I don't have to fix my own feedback anymore. It's automatically done. And I see the notes coming through. I still once in a while get an email from Amazon saying, hey, you have some stranded inventory. I send it to her and most of the time, it's already been dealt with and fixed. But let me tell you, being a single operator, my wife and I, this just takes so much off our plate. I can't say enough about it. It's Solutions for E-Commerce, the number 4, solutionsforecommerce.com/momentum to get 10% off her services. Be sure you tell her I sent you, solutionsforecommerce.com. All right, ready to get technical? Well, Michael is a technical guy. You know, I think we mentioned it in here, but he has a full-time job. In addition, he has the co-op warehouse that his wife runs and some other team members. And then he's got a pretty good-sized Amazon business. And I just love the fact that he's also developing some of the tools that are out there. You wouldn't know it. He does a lot of work behind the scenes, but there are some tools, some extensions that we're all using that Michael was involved in the development. He doesn't talk about it much. But in this segment, we're going to talk about ecomtoolsdesign.com. Ecomtoolsdesign.com. And Michael's working on some technology stuff. And I think what his idea basically is to get this kind of a dashboard together to take all these great tools that everybody's using and kind of bring them together. Now, I said it's like herding cats, all these type A personalities. Michael's up for the challenge. And if there's anybody who can do it, I think he's the perfect person for it. Let's get into the podcast. All right, we're back and we're talking with Michael Flanagan. And Michael's episode, I should say that, was number 21. I want to remind people to go back and listen to that because if you've never heard of a cooperative warehouse, and it's not really evolved much from what it was then, when's the last time you've turned over a client? Let me ask you this. How many did you turn over in 2016?
Let's see. So a goose.
Well, you don't have to name the people. He's moved to Matt and Todd.
Perfect example. Well, no. What happened is I think we turned over 3, and all 3 of them were because they ended up getting to a point where they wanted to do their own warehouse.
Okay. So it's they've outgrown you for their needs.
Right.
Okay.
Or just found that their business model was such that they wanted to be able to do it in-house.
Or retracted their business to absorb those costs themselves and make that profit themselves, right? If they correct. Wanted to, yeah, there's a way to manage that. Okay. But it's been a very stable business for you.
Right. Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah. That and again, that's because you have 15 clients. I love it. Okay. So you have this crazy idea. Right. So you're looking at all the different tools, right, that people are using and all these different applications, and you're thinking, huh, there's a clunkiness. You're not criticizing them, right? You believe they all serve need. Matter of fact, you've actually developed some of them.
Yeah. Quite the contrary. It's that I see that there are a lot of great tools out there, and that's both web apps. That you're actually running your businesses on and extensions, and I subscribe to a number of them, and my extension toolbar is ridiculously long. And what the challenge is for me is that because I have so many things going on. Oh, and by the way, just the update: I still have a full-time job.
Still
all of these things. Yeah, still. So when we had the original discussion back a couple years ago, I was getting that warehouse started and running my Amazon business, all the while still having a full-time day job. And you said, well, there may come a point where you decide that, you know, it's time to move on. And I said, yep, if it ever comes to where the job stops me from moving forward, that would be the time for me to look to make that jump. Well, so far it hasn't happened.
So you're still at the same company even?
Still at the same company.
That's awesome.
Well, but to give you an idea, they even changed my hours. So I only have to go into the office for half a day, and then I can remotely work from home late at night. So it's a pretty sweet gig. So
I like it.
I'm thankful for it. But at any rate, it still means that my time is valuable to me. And what has been happening is that I have this one app, and this is the app that I use to list all my products and put my costs in and where I bought it from. Then I have another app that I use as a repricer. Well, the first thing my repricer says is, you know, what's your product and how much did you pay for it? And I say, well, just go talk to the other app that I already entered that in. Oh, that's right. You don't talk to that other app. So I either have to manually enter it again, or I've got to do some sort of an export and an import. And then I'm going to go into and say, okay, but now I'd like to keep track of my inventory levels. And when I drop below a certain level, I want you to, you know, tweak me that it's time to order some. But you don't know that I placed an order for this already. So you're going to alert me that it's time to order more, because the app that I placed the order in doesn't talk to my replenishment application. So that's what I got to, whereas I'm looking at all of these phenomenal apps. What they do is great, but none of them do it all, and none of them are set up to talk to any of these other apps. And that was actually my first step, was to reach out to some of these and say, would it be possible to develop some plumbing that would let these talk to each other? And as expected, it didn't go very far.
I was going to say, did you meet resistance?
Yeah. Well,
why is that? I mean, you're one of those guys, you know, is it an ego thing? And it's not a negative. There's a pride. I mean, these guys created something. They brought something to life.
I honestly think what it is that it's not on their radar. It's an interesting thought, but we've already got resources allocated. We're rolling out this, and it's just not the right time for it. And I completely understand that.
Yeah, that's reasonable.
Right, exactly. But at the same point, I'm a technology guy. I've been a developer for 20 plus years, so I know that it's not that difficult to get this stuff to all be working together. And if it means that I have to do it from the ground up, so be it. I'll start working on this from the ground up.
Is it easier today to have them talk together than it was, you know, 5 years ago? I mean, it's, seriously.
It's well, the talk together, because of course, when you're designing an application from the ground up, there is no talking. It's all part of one application. I will say that I joke now that, you know, even just 5 years ago, especially 7 to 10 years ago, when you wanted to develop an application, you wrote every single line of code for everything that it needed to do. Today, I say I am less of an application programmer, and I am more of a component configurator, where I can buy functionality. So you want to be able to display beautiful charts on a dashboard that show you how much inventory you have in stock, what your net profits are, show all of this stuff graphically. You don't write that anymore. You go out, you pay a few $100s, you buy this component, you plug it on a page, and you point it to the data.
And then so that's a component? Is that, you know, I'm not familiar with the languages that they use to write this stuff in. So is that the correct term, a component?
Yeah, it's a component, and it literally is that. So I guess the best analogy I could give you is, at one point when you were manufacturing bicycles, you wanted to sell a bicycle, you actually had to build a wheel. So you had to build that outside rim, and then you had to insert each one of the spokes, and then you had to stitch up a seat, and you had to run cables for all this stuff. So you had to build everything from the ground up. And then a little time goes by, and now there are companies that don't build bicycles. They build wheels, and they build seats, and they sell those to somebody. So you can say, well, I don't want the 15-inch wheel. I want the 14-inch wheel. And instead of the black seat, I'd like the white seat. And you just place the order. They send it all to you in a box, and you assemble that, and you sell a bicycle. Coding has come a long way to that. There's still, it's not a perfect analogy because there's still a lot of code to write. But for a lot of these things, I just basically say, hey, put the 15-inch wheel on there. And I look at it and I say, you know what? That's just not doing it for me. That pie chart and that bar graph, I don't like the way they look. Can you go look at this company's charting component? Take ours out and plug that one in. And you plug that one in and you say, oh, yeah, there you go. That's what I'm looking for. And I didn't write a single line of code. I just kind of plugged that component in. And it really is that simple. And I would say right now, if I'm talking honestly about designing web-based applications, I would say probably 40 to 50% of it is finding the right components that you can work with and plugging them in.
You know, as I'm sitting there listening to you, I'm envisioning that this stuff, the number of people creating components has grown, because that's what they're teaching, that's what's hot, that's what's current, and the stuff that they've created is piling up. So your options to choose has gotten greater. Is that fair?
Yeah, I think that's absolutely fair. And where you will actually see that is just take a look at a lot of the applications that we're using and look at the interface. So when you bring up these web pages and you look at them, they're all starting to look similar. Maybe the colors are different, but for the most part, the pages that you're looking at all look very similar. Well, that's because you can actually buy, and I don't want to get too geeky and tech out on people. We'll lose your entire subscriber base here. But you buy what's called a framework, and all of that's in place. The menu structures across the top, the choices along the left-hand side, all of that's already there. It's done. You just rename what the menu choices are. And that's why you're finding that it's the same thing for website development. In the old days, we used to hand code HTML. Well, along comes WordPress and themes. And you just basically say, I want that theme, I want that picture, and I want this to be my tagline. And then you say publish, and you look at it, and you've got a web page. And it's almost like magic. And there's just no excuse anymore for people not to have a website. That, you know, there's no technology challenge anymore. You don't need any coding skills.
So now, we're back to that low barrier to entry.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's why In the old days, if I was going to quote somebody to develop a website for them, and I used to call it a enhanced brochureware, which meant that it was just maybe 5 or 6 pages that talked about your company and had some pictures and some designs in it. When I first got started, that was a $5,000 job. Well, now you'd be lucky to get $100 or $200 to set somebody's website up for them.
Because, again, it's a menu they're just picking and choosing. They're saying, I want this, 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 and this. It's all basic. The framework, as you described it, is already built. Okay, correct. So you're saying, hey, there's lots of this stuff out there. You want to make it, I mean, are you trying to make it easier? What are you trying to do? I think you're trying to solve your problem.
I'm trying to solve my problem, but I'm also looking at it. So the first thing I started with is at my prep center. Most all of the prep centers that I know of started out by using a shared Google Sheet, for example, one for each account, where you're my prep center client. You would go in there, enter the product description and how many you're sending to me. Then when they arrived, I'd find it in your spreadsheet and I'd put down that you ordered 20, I received 20. That's all great. That doesn't scale. It doesn't work well. It makes it very difficult for people when they're receiving product to find the actual product. So I said, look, this is even from my small, and I will say that even though I only have 15 accounts, all 15 are high volume sellers. So we may have a small number of clients, but we process a large amount of product. So even with, you know, our small number of clients, we were running into bottlenecks of receiving product, keeping track of product, and those types of things. So I see a problem. I'm a tech guy. So I go about to design an application that we can use in our prep center. So things like you no longer grab a product and go looking through a spreadsheet. You just scan the UPC and it finds it for you and just says, how many did you get? And then the clients can log in and they can see how much inventory they have and they can create their shipments and all of those types of things.
So you were able to help. I mean, in essence, you fixed two pieces of the puzzle. You knew how much was in hand, you as the prep center, and me as the owner got to know how much was in hand. And so it made me a better business person. I benefit and you benefit. So that's smart.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
So that was your approach and you've already done that.
And I've already done that. And, you know, it's one of those things they say, well, is it done? Well, no, it's software. It'll never be done. We'll keep adding to it. But we use it every day and it cut receiving time in half.
That's awesome.
So just that was, you know, a huge time saver. And then I took that next step and was to say that for my Amazon business, there are certain things that I want to track and there are functions that I want to be able to execute each and every day. And there are things that I want to automate so that I don't have to think about it and it just happens. And the other driving part of this was I was starting to think, wouldn't it be nice if my clients could enter their product information into an application that keeps track of their cost and it keeps track of their ROI, does all the reporting, all of those types of things, but it also talked to my app in the warehouse so that when they said, I want to create a shipment in this app, they don't have to come over and tell me in the warehouse in our prep center that we created this shipment and will you please send these items. So I'm doing that piece that I wanted to try and get some of these others to do, which is to create an application that talks to another application. And then I took it that next step further and I said, well, what are all of the apps that I'm currently using or best of class apps that are out there now? And which of these apps really should be in under this one umbrella to do all of these different things? So I started looking at listing products and repricing products and replenishing products and finding out whether or not you got reimbursed for products as you were supposed to and what kind of reports can I run. And I looked at all the things that I do now with all these different apps and noticed two things. One is that there's a lot of duplication of effort to get the information in that all of them need. And when you add up the cost that I'm paying every month for all of these apps, it's astronomical. It quickly gets out of control. And that we haven't even gotten to all the extensions that I use. So I'm a consumer. There's no question about it. I've got them all.
And so what's the end game? What are you thinking? I mean, what do you visualize? I mean, if you could look forward, and I don't even know if the technology is available yet, but what would be nirvana for you?
Nirvana will be the ability to support multi-channel fulfillment in one place, the ability to support multiple storage locations for inventory. That was another one that I thought of. Even though I have my own prep center, I'm on the far end of the East Coast. As I start to move into private label, I may need a West Coast prep center.
Right.
Because my product will be shipped most likely to the West Coast. I don't want to then truck it all the way across the country just so that I can say I process it at my own prep center.
And if you're using a just-in-time inventory system, right, because Amazon's just the fulfillment side of it,
yep,
it might make financial sense for you to have inventory on both sides of the coast.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. But I want an application where I can do a traditional purchase order. So though I can bring up and say, this is the vendor that I buy this product from. These are my terms. This is my contact information and all of that. I enter all of these items, and not only will it create a purchase order that can be emailed directly to my manufacturer to execute that purchase order, I'd be able to pick and say, where am I having this product shipped to? Am I shipping it to my warehouse in Salem, New Hampshire? Am I shipping it to a prep center on the West Coast? Am I shipping it to a different prep center, maybe in the Midwest? Because the vendor that I'm buying from is located in the Midwest. And then once it's received there, I want to be able to have them tell me, your product is in. I go in, I update my purchase order to say that I've received the product, and I can now run a report and say, what's all my inventory? What's the value of all my inventory? Here's my number. I've got $100,000 worth of inventory. Okay. How much of that is in Salem? How much of that's in the Midwest? And how much of that is in the West Coast? There are no apps that are doing that now. And to me, if my thinking is correct, that the multi-channel fulfillment is going to start really gaining steam, I think that that's going to be an important thing to be able to do.
Well, there's no question it's going to gain steam because, you know, you need to sell everywhere. And so the ability, you know, we're back to that efficient operation. When someone has the ability to see that they have a product and it's for sale on every channel and it sells and you can instantly remove it and all that kind of jazz. But when you have 10 of them and now all 10 of them are out there and they're moving, you know, based on the market, to me, that's the winner. Right. Because that's an efficiency. Right. That when you get down to it, what's really the difference? You bought it at a different price than I did. You might sell it at a different price than I did, but generally we're selling at what the market price is. Right. So that's probably the same. So you bought it at a different price. Your financing of that purchase price could be different. Right. You might have borrowed money. I didn't. Blah, 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 blah.
Correct.
But it really comes down to is those other costs, which I guess financing would fit in, that's really the only difference. And that cost is efficiency, period.
And that is business 101, is the efficiency of your business will dictate the success of your business. We can talk about all of the cash flow and gross profits and net profits and all of that, but it really boils down to if you have an inefficient business, there is something else in your business that's going to have to be abnormally good to overcome the inefficiency of your business.
Or you're going to have to accept mediocre.
Exactly.
Now, I've made this statement, and I think it's a fair statement for Steve. I don't want to be a CEO of a small business. I don't want to be the CEO because I think there's a connotation there. It's complex. I don't want that complexity in my life. I don't want all those challenges, all the staff and all those, you know, all that responsibility. The beauty of what you're describing, though, is with a piece of software, I don't need to have all that. I mean, that really is my data center.
Right. And that's what I'm looking for is the efficiency is to automate as much as possible. So what I see as a challenge to sell on multiple marketplaces is to maintain my inventory. so that if an item is sold on eBay and maybe I have 10 of these items in stock, meaning at a particular prep center, how many of those do I list for sale on all of these different platforms?
It's a good question.
Do I say 10 on every single platform? Well, you can do that, but you better be sure that if somebody buys 10 off of Jet, that you instantly get notified of that and you reduce the inventory available on every other platform that you're on.
And that software exists today. I mean, there are companies that, you know, they've been around for a while at some of those companies. But again, they don't work with your repricer. They don't work with your inventory location item. They don't work with all these other tools. And I think that's what you're saying, right?
Is that, and that's what I'm saying is that, yes, there are best-in-class applications that excel in particular areas. What I'm trying to do is say, I want this one application that's going to be able to handle all of these core features.
Like a dashboard almost.
Absolutely.
Okay. Okay. So the dashboard is called what?
Right now, I'm doing the whole thing like you did in the old NASA days and some of those, the code name for it. And I'm doing a complete ripoff of Lord of the Rings. And I'm calling it the One App.
The One App.
Because in Lord of the Rings, you have the One Ring, which is the one ring to rule them all. And that's what I kind of thought of this, is that if you're a Lord of the Rings geek, you know that there were these multiple rings, and each ring in itself was powerful. But there was the one ring that controlled them all. So my thing was the One App. So this is what it is. There are all of these very important things that need to get done. Let's roll them all into a single app.
So if somebody wants to find out more information... Right. Yeah. No, I get that. I mean, if somebody's looking, though, and they're like, OK, this is this geek's talk, this crazy geek talk resonates with me. I can see the vision. I understand what he's saying, because I, too, there's not a person listening to this who doesn't get challenged with the numerous extensions and apps that we're all using. So I think it resonates with most people. They can actually get in and see what you're talking about by going to, is this website, right? Ecom Tools Design.com. Right. So ecomtoolsdesign.com. And I'll have a link on the website. But that's, you know, when I see it, then I can get my arms around it a little bit more, because that's a lot. I mean, that's a lot to take in for a non-techie like me, Michael.
I mean, I agree, and it's a lot to do for a techie.
yeah, you got your hands full, don't you?
It's an ambitious project, and I will say that the way it's going to happen, the way we're building this, is modular, so that we'll be able to, you know, get some early adopters in to maybe start testing this a bit and say, look, these are the modules that we have available. These are the things that you can do, and as time goes on, we'll keep on adding more and more of these functions.
And so if somebody has an opinion and they want to say, hey, can you add this or can you do this, the best place to reach out to you is in your Facebook group. Is that correct?
Yes. Yeah. I have a Facebook group, e-commerce and technology. And that is, I hang out there all the time. And I encourage people to come in. There's no selling going on. I actually, this is the announcement. I've talked a little bit about this in general, but really haven't let anybody know the big grand design that I have going here. So in that group is where I'll start, you know, getting more detailed with this. But I also answer just general tech questions. I'm trying to figure out a way to do this in Excel. Yep, just post it up there, and I'll tell you exactly how to do that.
Okay.
What have you.
So that site is called Technology and E-Commerce. It's a Facebook group. It's a free Facebook group, but it's closed. So you want to make sure they're real and that whole jazz, right? So they can request to come in there.
Request it, and I approve them right away as long as they're real.
You know, you're also one of the go-to guys when somebody has an app or a product idea. Are you open to talking about that kind of stuff too?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I can, I've had too many people that want to have me do the apps for them, and the bandwidth is just not there. But if they want to ask some questions about, you know, how do I do this? Or the other thing that I've done that's worked out well is to give them direction on how to have these apps developed for them by using.
Because you got to speak that language.
Yes,
that's really important that you know what you're asking those app developers, because they're out there. There are lots of them. But you've got to really understand what you're asking, because you'll get what they'll get what you ask for. And if you don't ask for the right thing, you're going to get what you ask for, and it won't be the right thing.
You got it. You got it.
All right. Man, I wish you nothing but success. I can't wait to see where this goes, because I love the idea of the one app, that one kind of really is a dashboard. And I'm excited to see, as you get more buy-in from other developers that say, hey, they need to be on there too. It'll be interesting to see as they go. And you've developed quite a few products, so I'm assuming they'll all be on there. So that'll make it a little bit easier to start.
Exactly.
All right, great. Man, I wish you nothing but success. I'm excited for you, and I can't wait to talk with you in another year and change to see where you're at then.
Same to you, Stephen. Always a pleasure.
All right, take care. Man, I hope you enjoyed that. I know it got a little technical there, but, you know, you're in an e-commerce business. Guess what? It's technical. There's lots of moving pieces behind the scene, and it's only going to accelerate. If you're not embracing it, you're missing it. It is only going to accelerate. And so hopefully you get something from this. ecommercemomentum.com, ecommercemomentum.com. Take care.
Thanks for listening to the e-commerce Momentum Podcast. All the links mentioned today can be found at ecommercemomentum.com under this episode number. Please remember to subscribe and like us on iTunes.